Welcome to Sunday Morning. My name is Reagan Warfield, the Baltimore Station. That's a nonprofit organization we're going to hear about over the next half hour from two guests in the studio with us. John Friedel is the executive director and Kim Kalari is the director of development and communications. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Reagan.
So first, let's just start with the obvious. What is the Baltimore Station?
Well, the Baltimore Station has been around going into our 30th year, and I think that's a really good question because some people who've known us for a while have one set of ideas of who we are, and then we have morphed into even more over that period of time. So we started 29 years ago, almost 30 years ago, as a volunteer-based organization in South Baltimore when three residents recognized that there were a number of men who were homeless hanging around Cross Street Market. And as they got to know these men, giving them sandwiches and blankets, they realized most of them were Vietnam-era veterans. And they were really committed to doing more for these men. And out of that, in 1996, we moved to the fire station, it was the old E26 station on West Street, and it became a 40-bed shelter for homeless veterans and homeless men in South Baltimore. Over the period of time from that, we've now expanded into 91 beds in South Baltimore and 48 beds in West Baltimore and Sandtown Winchester community, dealing with the issues of homelessness for veterans primarily. Our men generally are homeless. Many of them have substance use disorder, mental health co-occurring disorders, and predominantly because of those issues, many, if not most, are unemployed. So we have really kind of divisionalized, in a sense, dealing with 91 beds reserved for the homeless veteran who is dealing with substance use disorder, self-medicating, and all mental health issues, and then also 40 beds reserved just for homeless veterans, men, who are unemployed looking to get back into the workforce game. In addition to that, this past year, and this would be something that people who are listening may not know, we've expanded our services to outpatient. So even though you may not be living within the four walls of either of our facilities, you can avail yourself of outpatient clinical treatment for substance use disorder through our organization.
And how did figuring that out come about? Because I imagine that's something that you identified as a problem a long time ago and realized that that could be a nice solution for some of the people you provide services to.
Well, I think that when we look at the men who come to stay with us as they put their lives back together, we realize that, you know, we could do great work up until the point that they left our facility, went back out into the community. But in reality, the community has not changed while our men did. So we recognize the need for aftercare and outpatient services, so that we could then stay in touch with the men as they transitioned back into the community. And I think it was sort of a logical next step for us so that we can help them get back in there. It's not such an abrupt end to their time with us. And we find that many of the men are apprehensive about going back out into the community because, again, the community hasn't changed a whole lot, and they've done a lot of hard work to get ready to go back. They have a job. They have an apartment. You know, their sobriety is with them. They're dealing with the mental health issues and formulating their relationships with family and friends. They need a little bit more help just to make that transition peaceful and successful.
And how do the men come to the doors? How do they find out about the Baltimore Station? What's usually the first step?
We have a great relationship and partnership with the Veterans Administration, and we are actually the largest provider in this region in terms of the service array that we offer. So many of the men come via referral from the VA medical system, through the walk-in clinic at the VA. And I have to say also there's a huge network of people who know who we are and people know where we are. So we get a lot of people who just talk to other people and make referrals that way. We do have on staff an outreach coordinator who is actually a graduate of the program. And his name is James Hardy. And James goes around to a lot of the emergency rooms. He goes to a lot of the shelters. He meets people on the street. If you're a business in the Baltimore downtown area and you have someone hanging out who's a veteran who needs services, give us a call, give James a call, because you know, he will go out and actually screen. But also a lot of the men know each other. There's a really good network of folks who are homeless, and they have a network of communication. They share experiences and opportunities with each other.
And once a vet, let's say, so James will go and work with them a little bit. At what point, what's the process like, starting from James reaching out to them possibly?
So generally speaking, once James reaches out, or once we hear from somebody, or even if they show up at our door, we start with contacting the Veterans Administration liaisons to find out what benefits the person is eligible for, and then find out really what the person wants to do. If the person's looking to get into a substance use treatment program, or if they're simply looking for housing, or if they're looking for employment, We figure out whether they're a good fit for our program, or if we need to make a referral somewhere else, we'll do that. We don't turn people out. We don't put people on the street, but we really work to find out what's the best fit. And once it's determined they can come to our facility, they come in that day, and we give them a bunk. We get them cleaned up. We have clothing. We have food. And obviously, we have medical partners through the VA medical system. And then they start working with the liaisons at the VA and with our staff to formulate an individualized case plan, you know, to really meet the goals and objectives. And that starts day one. And the two overarching goals are obviously independent living and housing and to increase income. So we work to make sure all the benefits are lined up, make sure that their discharge status is as good as it can possibly be from service, and then line them up for what they need to do to put their lives back together.
And how long do those case plans usually, what's the time frame usually?
Well, the beautiful thing is we have the opportunity to work with a veteran for up to 2 years, because it does take a long time, you know, to really unravel everything that's happened while you've been homeless and on the streets. So the average length of stay is actually 13 months. So really the time that someone's with us varies. Some people are less than 30 days. Some people are up to 2 years, but the average is 13 months. And during that time, we're getting them the medical attention they need. We're making sure that the benefits array are lined up, making sure that they're stable enough to go back into the community with a good success rate.
And why? What is unique about the Baltimore Station itself? What does the Baltimore Station do that maybe nowhere else in Baltimore or even Maryland does?
I think there are two things that really differentiate us. One, it's a individualized case plan, understanding that people, it's not prescriptive and there's not a one-size-fits-all, and recognizing that our youngest person was 21 last year, our oldest was 88. The needs and desires of a 21-year-old and 88-year-old are totally different. So again, formulating that individualized plan to reach the objectives, everyone's case plan looks different. I think the other part of that is that when you look at the service array that we offer, I like to say it looks a lot like a college curriculum, where really your day starts at 7 in the morning and ends about 9 o'clock at night, and there are mandatory programming pieces in there, and that gets down into relapse prevention and cognitive behavioral skills and a lot of that stuff. But then there's also an elective series, and I think when you think of elective series, some people might think it's a luxury, but it really is a necessity in life. We can take all of the bad behaviors and bad things out of our lives, but until we have something that's pro-social and gives us joy, you're just an empty shell waiting for the backfill of the bad. So the elective series is something I'm really proud of, our staff are really proud of, and a lot of it comes from suggestion of the residents themselves. But there are things like Tai Chi, there's a drama coach, there's a music therapist from Towson University who does a drumming circle. There are art classes. The Baltimore Blast comes down and they work with the guys on physical fitness and activities. So again, from the outside looking in, it becomes a program that anyone of means would want to write a check for. And those services are available for the people who can least afford it. So I think that differentiates us a lot. I think also just the number of people who come through the facility from the community harkens back to the roots when we were a volunteer-based organization, but then augments all the professionalism and all the case management that we have. We have over 2,200 volunteers individually, over 200 businesses and groups that come in, many of which have been coming for 24 years. I have to say Catholic Communities of South Baltimore is our longest serving group at 24 years of service. But again, that neutralizes the landscape. It takes the stigma away from mental health and substance use disorder and homelessness, and really creates relationships that are valuable for the men as they begin to think about going back into the community. So it becomes a civil society within four walls that if we could only replicate in our city, our state, our country, our world, would serve us all very well, really.
That's incredible. So with one of the goals being income and increasing income and workforce development, how do you go about doing that?
Well, we have a lot of partnerships really based on those 24 years, and Kim will tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so, you know, as John said, we're just very, very fortunate to have a lot of community support. And with the launch of our new workforce development program in October, we're just working a lot with local partners, businesses, and organizations, and actually people are approaching us, but really to offer, you know, internships, job experiences with the men, for the men, while they are in our program and under our care.
So what kind of things are they doing with the development program?
So they are actually, we have folks who are working with us on resume building, so taking a military, you know, resume and transferring it into what it would look like as a civilian. You know, we have a lot of men who, you know, super qualified, super high trained, educated, who had amazing jobs before they came to the Baltimore station. But it's taking all those skills and really putting it into a form that translates again into a job in civilian, you know, in civilian life. So we've got folks helping with that. We have folks helping with interviewing skills, resume building, interviewing skills, helping them get dressed, you know, like what does it look like to go and actually interview for a job? Also computer skills. I mean, a lot of our men have been out of the workforce for so long that now pretty much everything is done online. So rarely do you go in and actually fill out an application. So we have folks who are teaching them, you know, how to do that. Like, how do you sit down at a computer and apply for a job?
It's amazing because I know the conversation, it's a constant one, is what do we do about homelessness in America and in Maryland and in Baltimore? And yet here are so many tangible ideas and ones that you're applying every single day to fight the problem and to fight the stigma that you mentioned as well.
Yep.
So those are incredible. So it's obviously dependent on partnering with members of the community, organizations in the community. Tell us a little bit about those organizations. Who specifically? You mentioned a few already.
So again, as John had mentioned, you know, we were founded by volunteers. So we have been very purposeful as the organization grows to make sure that volunteers are a key part of the organization. So again, we have folks who contact us all the time about, hey, can we do a donation drive for you? Can we bring your guys out to see what our facility looks like? And maybe there's an opportunity for them to work here someday. So really, I mean, we get calls and emails all the time just with different ideas. And because we're so small and we think outside of the box, we entertain pretty much everything.
What's been some of the more unique partnerships you've come up with?
I think, you know, from a workforce training and employment perspective, Maryland Multi-Housing Association has a really good workforce training program to get people lined up to become property managers. And I think for our men, where they're looking to, you know, find a community to live in, an apartment and then also a job, that is something that creates sort of a network around the men where they can get the job training and then get placement in employment. We're really looking forward to that partnership. That's relatively recent for us. But again, many of our men want to stay in the general community, so that's a way of finding their community and their job all in one. We've also had great success with Amazon during the holidays with some jobs leading into permanent employment. And I think, again, just meeting people where they are. Many of the men end up in the food service industry. It's a logical and likely thing. There's several partners there. And again, I think it's where we oftentimes societally we want to put people in a box, and we find just the array of people from janitorial jobs to recently we had a resident who was very high level, had a high level security clearance. He's gotten a job with the Veterans Administration in their IT department. So again, we can't categorize one person, one type of job. It really is the full spectrum and full array, which I think is also something where it's harder work to do in terms of finding out what someone wants to do and what they can do and what the possibility they've yet to discover is. But again, we're always looking for new partners in that array as well.
Yeah, we work to one of our gentlemen received funding last year to work, it was called Talmar Gardens out in Towson, and he actually went through a farming program. Oh, wow. Urban farming, and it was an extensive, like a 10-month program where he really learned from beginning to end, like what it's like to, if you want to be an urban farmer, kind of what that looks like and all the technical. And it was, and he graduated and, you know, received a plot of land to do his own farming. So just unique experiences like that.
It sounds like it. We're talking with John Friedel and Kim Kalari from the Baltimore station. Someone might be listening and they themselves or might know of somebody who might be great for your programs. What should we tell them?
Well, so I think it really breaks down to if you know a veteran, a male veteran who is homeless, that's where I'd start. And, you know, from that, we might determine that person has a substance use disorder or some mental health issues going on. And we can work with that. It might just be that they're homeless because they lost their job. We see people who are living paycheck to paycheck. I think that's something throughout our society today. and they might be living in their car, they might be couch surfing, they might, you know, really be down on their luck. Maybe it was a relationship that ended that, you know, forced them onto the streets, but they're looking to get back in the employment game, and again, that's something we can work with. So it starts with finding the male veteran who is homeless and then making the call to us, and we'll help figure out how to help.
Does it usually start with something as simple as a phone call?
It can.
Phone call or website. You know, okay. You can go on our website, baltimorestation.org, and there's a form, very basic form that people fill out, and it goes right to our clinical director and our assistant clinical director and our outreach coordinator, and then they take it from there.
And we might have people listening who are saying, I want to volunteer. I want to be part of this program. What can we tell them?
So same thing. I mean, just to go to our website and volunteers, as John said, you know, we have over 2,000 individual volunteers. And really, I mean, they are the crux of the organization. We have families who come in. We have businesses. We have sports teams. It really runs the gamut. Of volunteering, and volunteering typically looks like coming in and serving a meal. 7 days a week, we have dinner, obviously, so folks come in and they can serve our dinner, they can cater it, they can cook on our premises, they can cook off premises. It's really whatever's the easiest for that particular group. We also have individuals who come in. The first Thursday of every month is individual volunteer night. So people can just come in and serve dinner. And probably the most important part, so obviously the serving dinner is very important. It helps tremendously with our food cost. But more importantly, after you serve dinner, you actually sit down and have, you break bread with the residents.
Oh, wow.
Which is very unique to us. And it really, really helps tremendously with the residents' recovery. Because again, you've got people who are coming in who have worked all day, or they're taking a couple early morning hours on a Saturday, you know, to come in and have breakfast. And it helps with their self-esteem, their self-worth, that you have taken your personal time to sit down and get to know them. And it's really, I mean, we're fortunate, we get to see it every day, and just the transformation and the impact it has on the residents is incredible.
What was it like for each of you the first time you did the breaking of the bread?
It's cool. I mean, I have to say, I mean, we were just there on Saturday. We had a lunch with one of our partners, and every time you sit down, it's a really wonderful experience. I mean, and again, you know, it puts a face to homelessness, and you sit there and you realize that it could be any one of us, quite honestly, who could be in that situation.
You know, I think it goes even further than that. When we really look at giving the residents voice and choice, mm-hmm. something evolved about 3 years and 3 months ago, mm-hmm. where the men wanted an opportunity to get dressed up and learn more social skills. And so from that has evolved what we call our formal dinner series. And it is the second Monday of every month. And on the odd months, our board of directors serve. On even months, the staff serve the men. The men get an invitation in the mail. They get the menu ahead of time. Oftentimes, restaurants come and prepare a three-course meal. We decorate the dining hall. It's a great thing in terms of bringing the men's level of expectation up a little bit. And 3 years ago, we had a restaurant pull out at the last minute. So clinical director, assistant clinical director, and I became the chefs for the night. And that has perpetuated now 3 years.
Oh.
But again, it takes it to another level, just showing that we are not superior. We're all equal, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates that civil society that we kept speaking of. So if there are restaurants out there that want to be a part of that, mm-hmm. we can certainly accommodate that request. I think we are now, as a cooking team internally, going to do 2 meals a year, is what I've been told. Mm-hmm. But again, it really, it's a heartwarming time for that. I also think that when it comes to volunteers, we don't like to be prescriptive in telling people what to do. As Kim said, the first point of entry might be a meal service, just to gauge, you know, what your level would be. But we had a gentleman who retired recently, and he wanted to get involved. And, you know, he said, I want to do something. What do you want me to do? And I said, ponder and think about what you want to do. And he came up with the idea that he would do a letter writing campaign, a journaling class. And he's been doing that now over a year.
Wow.
So every Wednesday he comes and spends an hour, hour and a half with the men, and helping the men chronicle their lives as a legacy, you know, to their families. And I think, again, it gives that gentleman, it feeds his soul. And I know the men look forward to it every week.
And I think, too, what we've seen over the last couple of years is a lot of people really do want to get involved locally. And really, you know, by working with us, volunteering, supporting us, you get the opportunity to come in and you meet and sit down and talk to the people that you're helping, which is just amazing. And, you know, we laugh all the time with volunteers because it's very rare for somebody not to get further involved with us. Like, we met with some folks on Friday and we're like, we'll see you back. And it's it's just as rewarding for them, for the volunteers, as it is for the men.
Sounds really tangible.
It's very tangible.
You can see the progress, and you can see what you're doing having its impact. And it could be the meal. It could be the drilling program. I imagine if you have job skills or job training skills, you can definitely apply those.
So for sure.
That's great. And you do donation drives? You accept donation drives?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
How can people do that?
So they can contact, again, through the website, myself or Todd Troster, who's our community outreach manager. And we have folks who do donation drives for us all the time. So especially this time of year, you know, for winter coats and sweatpants, hats, really anything. All we ask is just that folks kind of coordinate that, you know, through the organization so that we make sure we're getting, you know, we're getting what we need.
Okay. Well, entering the 30th year, you mentioned how it's had those very humble beginnings from Cross Street Market to where you are now. What's been the biggest change over those 30 years?
I would have to say, you know, we were very, very grassroots. And I think when you look at it, you had volunteers who ran the organization, did all that. And I would say that over the 30 years, you know, we have gained Maryland state licensure for residential treatment and outpatient. So that requires another whole set of things and standards to live up to. Last year we were awarded our national accreditation, where they look at over 20,000 individual items, practices, and policies. And that was a huge leap for us, you know, expanding into the service array of outpatient treatment. And throughout all of that, the volunteers are still a huge part of running the day-to-day in terms of the interaction with the men, the food, the services, the donations. But over the past 3 years, we have really morphed into a different organization without losing the character. So we have upgraded in terms of clinical. All of our case managers now are master's level clinicians, social workers, licensed professional counselors. We've expanded the staff commensurately to really provide a better level of service. But I think, you know, all of that said, we haven't lost our foundation of volunteer and community. South Baltimore certainly is home for us. I think it's a careful toggle to grow an organization and not lose its identity. So I think we've been very successful in doing that. And to me, I think it's something we can all be very proud of.
Yeah, and I think, too, from where I sit, I've seen, again, you know, like John had talked about, voice and choice for the residents, and that really, over the years, has really taken a stronghold of the organization and just really kind of moving and fine-tuning things as their needs change. We're not just, okay, this is the way we're going to do it and that's it. It's like, well, no, things have changed. Mental health issues have increased, and as a result, we take a look at our program and how do we tweak it to meet their needs.
And it changes really with the population. So, you know, it comes in waves. Right now, our average age is probably late 40s, early 50s, which certainly makes me feel more comfortable with where I am in life. But then there are times when we have a lot of younger ones, and their activity level and interest change. And when we look at field trips, which is a component too, the men actually choose what their field trips are. And they choose a lot of their activities. They plan them out without a lot of guidance on our part. We do review. And then we do find funding for those things. But in the past year, they've been on two fishing trips, which then morphed into the men, eight of the men who have a really fondness for fishing have formulated their professional fishermen's club.
Oh, wow.
And so they have their own rods and reels, and they now can go fishing. And what that says to me is that when they leave us, those eight men will probably still be in touch, and they'll probably organize fishing trips, and they will probably have joy in their life. They've been to the National Bible Museum, the Smithsonian. They've been to Gettysburg now three times.
Yeah.
Every year we go to Camp Putak for a two-night overnight adventure, which we have a great partnership with Camp Putak. But again, for the men to have experiences they might not have had growing up, they might not have had as young adults, but they're now having that. And I think, again, you look at that, giving someone who's in the program that kind of voice and ability to take control of their life also leads to success in their recovery.
Yeah, we're also very fortunate, too, you know, as John mentioned, we have a great partnership with the Baltimore Blast. We also work with the Orioles and the Ravens, who through our board president, Lou Casoris, and Kyle Richardson, who used to be with the Ravens, they have actually put together, it's called Vets for Vets. And it's a program where they are actually taking our men to Orioles games, and they went to the Ravens game and got them on-field passes. And then they were up in one of the suites to watch the game and just experiences, because where our offices are, literally M&T Bank Stadium and Camden Yards are right. You could see them from our offices. So for a lot of these men, they've never been to a baseball game or to a football game. And then to be able to go and to be with, you know, a former Raven and to go on the field and just and see, you know, the pregame workout and everything is incredible. I mean, it's just it's a wonderful experience for them.
This sounds like an approach that's attacking the problem on every possible level, mm-hmm. you know, social, psychological, clinical, really mm-hmm. doing some great work. One more time, information about the Baltimore station. How can people find out, but whether it's volunteer opportunities, donation drives, or referring a possible resident?
So the best thing is just to go to our website. It's constantly updated with everything we're doing, everything the residents are doing. All the contact information is on there. Including our upcoming events. So I got to put a plug in for our, you know, we do two big fundraisers every year. So all of the information will be on there. And as you pointed out, you know, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary in 2019. So we're actually doing 30 events for 30 years. So just really encourage people to visit wow. us. And we're on social media, very active on social media, just to check us out and to get involved.
The Baltimore Station. John, Kim, thank you so much for coming in. Tell
thank
us
you.
All about it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.